Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. On today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming Linda Tucker, an amazing woman from South Africa who has devoted her life to saving the white lions. She's recently published the best-selling book, Saving the White Lions, One Woman's Battle for Africa's Most Sacred Animal. Recently, I had the pleasure of meeting her in person, and let me tell you, she is lovely. When you read Saving the White Lions, you'll be able to take a closer look and actually experience a glimpse of her precious but most sacred world as she continues her mission to save these beings. So I would like to welcome to the show Linda Tucker. Good afternoon, Linda, and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, June, and thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's absolutely critical. I'm honored to be here.
And I am honored to have you on the show. I know that there are so many listeners who are very concerned about our big cats, and your story is something that I don't think many people are even aware of. So before we get into what the current situation is with the white lions, if you could just take a few minutes and share with our audience a little bit about yourself and what your childhood was like, especially the time that you spent in Sibavati.
Well, my childhood was growing up in South Africa, which was in the state of apartheid at that time, which basically was a system which prejudiced 90% of the inhabitants of that country, and it was a very racist system, lots of injustice. You know, the majority of the country who were black people were not allowed into beaches or public buildings. They weren't even allowed to go to the national parks to see the lions and the animals, which are their heritage. And so it was a really unjust system. And having come from grandparents whose family, you know, was wiped out in the Holocaust, there were lots of comparisons. But I think the important thing that really stayed with me, once apartheid fell and, you know, the new South Africa was reinstated and there was a wonderful sharing of culture finally, what stayed with me is the fact that the animal rights were just not addressed at all, and that there were no rights for those stakeholders.
It's very interesting that you say that, especially since the lion is a significant symbol. Now, you write about your interest in symbols. How has this knowledge helped you to understand your journey? And also, can you describe the significance of the lion, especially the white lion, as a special symbol in various cultures?
Well, it's fascinating because I was trained in a South African university, and then I went to Cambridge University in the UK. So, you know, it was a very academic beginning to my training in this area, and I studied symbolism. And so when I started working with lions, and that's a big story, as you know, when I started working with lions, I uncovered the real meaning behind them, the symbol of the lion, as well as the real crisis behind the real lions that are struggling to survive in our times. So the symbol of the lion throughout history, throughout cultures, is one clear radiant symbol, and that is leadership. Kingship. All the African kings were associated with lions, and it's the same with the kings throughout Europe and so on. But it goes deeper than that. It's quite a long story. It's also associated with gold. So gold is called the lion of metals, and the lions are the guardian of gold, and so on. But the white lions are not only the kings, they are considered the king of kings. They are the spirit lions, or sometimes known as the lions of God in the region, this whole story plays out in my life, the region you refer to, Simbavati. And just again on the question of symbolism, Simbavati, you hear the word Simba meaning lion, and then Vati means to come down from the heavens. So the place where the white lions were born, which is one place only on earth, is called the place where the star lions came down.
Can you explain what the meaning of star lions is?
Well, it really is a very profound mystery. These animals are the stuff of myths and legends. They are believed to be the most sacred animals on the African continent, and they originated in this one place, which was believed to be a sacred site. It just so happens, if you think this is a coincidence, that this one place where they were born aligns exactly with the Great Sphinx of Giza, humankind's greatest lion riddle. So how is it that the white lions, believed to be the star lions, are born in the exact place on earth that aligns with humankind's greatest lion riddle? I call that the mystery of the white lions, and it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. We could spend a lot of time talking about this.
It's interesting. You wrote, nothing is supernatural. It's all entirely natural. That's true magical. That is such a powerful statement. And throughout the book, you really have some incredible thoughts that you have put on paper. And I think the readers will really appreciate all of your thoughts, especially your philosophy about nature, about how we are all connected. Can you talk a little bit about the disconnection that is present with the human species and also how people are becoming more reconnected thanks to the animals?
Yes, well, you know, humanity is disconnected from nature and from the meaning, the real symbolic meaning behind things. Because when you know nature as I do, everything is meaningful. There are no chance events because God is present in nature. That's the truth. So one of my great teachers, and I've worked with some very great indigenous African elders who hold a lot of secret knowledge that they shared with me. And this great teacher of mine, his name was Credo Mutwa, he's the greatest living library on the African continent and has knowledge that goes back thousands of years that was passed on to him by elders in a whole oral tradition. Anyway, he said to me, humankind at this time must make two connections if they are going to survive. The first is they have to reconnect with the earth, and the second is they have to reconnect with the stars. Fascinating. Anyway, I think humankind is starting to do that because people are waking up to the fact that everything arises from the earth, all the food that we eat, you know, all the animals, those of us who still eat, who are not just vegetarian, those animals eat from the plants, from the earth. It all arises from the earth. So, you know, no intelligent species destroys the earth when that's what sustains us. And people are waking up to that. They're also waking up to the stars because astrology, the meaning behind things, is a profound knowledge that has existed throughout time and is still applicable today. And you'll find more and more people are consulting astrologers and finding that there is a link between the cosmos and events that take place on Earth.
Thank you. Can you talk about Maria Kosa and how you came to meet this extraordinary woman?
Well, okay. I was in advertising and marketing in the glamour world at the time. I had finished at Cambridge University and I was I was in Paris and all the fashion centers of Europe. And then I took a holiday back to South Africa to the place of my origin, this place called Simbavati, where these legendary lions were supposed to have roamed, although I had never seen them. Very few people had seen the snow-white lions of that region. And a very strange thing happened that night. A group of us got trapped in the middle of a pride of lions, a very angry pride of lions, who had surrounded us and were threatening us. There were 24 lions. It was very dangerous. We couldn't get out of that situation. People were panicking. They were behaving like prey. And, of course, cats, you know, when humans behave like prey, cats behave like predators. So it was incredibly dangerous. But then what happened was that this woman came walking on foot, carrying a baby on her back, strapped to her back in the way that the indigenous people do in that part of the world, the Tsonga people. And she came walking straight through the lions and calmed the lions and came to my rescue. It was the most miraculous event of my life. And I later learned that her name was Maria Khosa, the Lion Queen of Simbavati. And she was from a long lineage of lion priestesses, medicine people from that part of the world. And she had the knowledge of communicating with lions, basically through love and respect, through treating them as her own family. So that was a total near-death experience that kind of woke me up, and I started living for the first time in my life.
Mm. And it's interesting because although you did not speak her language, Shangaan, is it?
That's right, Shangaan.
Nor did she speak English.
Correct.
You communicated, and it was just interesting to learn about how your relationship came about and how she truly became your mentor, even though there was the language barrier. And I think the fact that you were able to learn so much from this extremely blessed woman, the fact that you could also utilize the same skills, if you will, to communicate with the animals and understand what these beings were going through and also help you further yourself along on your journey to protecting the species.
Yes, isn't that amazing? You know, obviously I said to her, how is it that, you know, you've chosen me? Because that's what that wake-up call was about. It was a way of waking me up and making sure that I really started to live and wasn't just living an artificial life. I know it's very glamorous, but it was totally artificial and totally out of touch with reality, which is, you know, which is that our Earth is in a lot of trouble because humans have contaminated, you know, all our life. I have contaminated the Earth. So I needed something that drastic to bring me down to Earth and make me start being responsible for good governance, you know, stewardship of our Earth.
And it's interesting that you wrote that people unconsciously contribute to harm and to contribute to the harm that's inflicted upon Mother Nature. And it's almost as if it's a process where people have to go through what they need to in order to realize what they're doing. And that's basically what happened to you.
I think, you know, most people, and it was myself included, are basically kind of sleepwalking. They're numb. Mm. They're ignorant, and they don't want to know because the horror is so bad that they'd rather just, you know, keep ticking over and not know the truth. And in fact, however challenging the truth is, it is a much better condition to know about it because it's being alive and it's being connected and reconnected with nature and realizing that there's a force in nature, as we were saying, you know, there is a divine presence, which is the creator who created this incredible earth that we are meant to be governing responsibly, not killing. So it however serious the crisis, it's better to know about it and suddenly become agents of change, effective agents of change.
You also wrote, quote, "Everything in nature carries significance. One simply has to know how to read the signs." That is such a profound statement. I truly appreciated the fact that you wrote that, and it really, really says a lot about how people go on this journey in their life and how they evolve from the lower vibrational existence to a much higher level.
Right, right, absolutely. And I think, you know, I can share with our audience one of the most profound moments in my life, and that was the realization that these incredibly magnificent animals who are believed to be sacred with good reason were being killed by trophy hunters from around the world. They were being stolen from the wild. They were being sent to zoos and circuses in every corner of the globe, and you know, that includes Siegfried and Roy in Las Vegas. That's where they got their lions. And and so terrible things were happening to them. But the worst of all was that they were put into cages, breeding camps, speed breeding camps, where they were being bred to be killed as trophies in these cages. It's hard to believe this has been going on and is legalized in South Africa. So the situation, the crisis today, is that there are more lions in cages in South Africa than there are in the wild. That's the statistic.
Wow.
Scary and horrendous. I know we're going to come to this in a moment, I'm sure, because, you know, this is the truth that everyone would like to know about, as well as the beautiful side that offers us hope. So I was actually going to get on to that side. This is the terrible crisis that was presented to me when I was rescued from the lions by Maria, and she told me what had been going on in this region. And I said to her, "Well, how are we going to save these lions?" And she said, "No matter what people do to try and destroy nature, God is stronger, and God will show the sacredness that still exists in nature." And she said to me, "There is going to be a lioness born in a place of great sacred significance to humanity, but you need to look out for the signs." We were talking about signs a moment ago, and she said, "You need to look out for the signs." And I of course, didn't know what she was referring to, but shortly afterwards, a little white lion cub was born in Bethlehem on Christmas Day in the year 2000, and I couldn't ignore the signs. You know, I contacted her and I said, "This is what's happened," and she said, "That is the sacred lioness that Africa's been waiting for." But the horrible truth is that Bethlehem in South Africa is the center of this notorious trophy hunting industry where endangered animals are bred in cages to be killed in cages. It's known as canned lion hunting. So there was a sign, loud and clear, that nature, you know, that God exists in nature, and yet humans are so out of touch with, you know, the true value of things that I mean, it was a horror camp. I mean, it was my worst nightmare.
Now, canned hunting is not something that is specific to South Africa. It's something that is a global problem. Can you share with our audience about what types of situations you can find in these hunting grounds, if you will, as well as whether or not the hunters are in support of the canned hunts? Are all hunters in support of canned hunting?
Right. Good question, June. So the problem is that this is going on in South Africa, but of course it's supported by trophy hunters from around the world. And the, you know, the really shocking statistic, which I'm sure will upset a lot of our listeners, is that over 50%, in fact, the majority of the lion trophies coming out of Africa are American trophy hunters, right? And the majority of that are lions that are captive bred to be killed. So they don't even have a life. They have no dignity. They have no. There's no fair chase. So these are all the hunting ethics that are supposed to exist, you know. So I would say that hunting associations really frown on anyone who gets involved in these malpractices. But unfortunately, even those powerful associations like Safari Club International and the other, Safari Club International operates out of Las Vegas, and there are other very, very wealthy trophy hunting outfits. They're not stopping canned lion hunting. So basically, they're just silently supporting it, in my view.
Linda, could you explain to our audience what is a lion guardian, and can you also share with our audience the story of Ingwavuma?
Well, a lot of people today are understanding that the animals who live with us are there to love and protect us. And sometimes when they pass into spirit, they are still there guarding over us. You know, a lot of people are realizing that so-called pets are much more than just pets. They are guardians and companions who have a very, very, very close soul bond with us. I had just that association with a lion called Ingwavuma. In fact, he first started appearing to me in my dreams, right back to childhood. What would happen is I would wake up screaming because this lion was standing over me, basically guarding over me, but breathing on me. And I'd wake up screaming, and then he'd be roaring at me, and I'd be screaming. And so it went. And this nightmare continued for years and years and years. And finally, when I met this amazing lion priestess, Maria Corsa, the dreams were still there, and I told her about these dreams, and instead of, you know, sympathizing, she just laughed in my face, and she said, well, as long as you keep screaming at him, he's going to keep roaring at you, because he's trying to guard you and protect you, and you just can't hear that. Hmm. And I mean, literally, that changed everything. I stopped having these terrifying dreams, and basically I started having dreams of him guarding me and walking beside me and, you know, licking my face. And her explanation was that he is my spirit guide, my guardian. And then she said to me, he's not only a spirit guide in your dreams, he's actually a real physical lion that exists in Simbavati, in this land. And she said, you're going to see him, and the way you know that he is your spirit guide is that he has wings. Now, we were talking about the fact that, you know, that I'm trained in understanding symbols, you know, dating yeah. back to Cambridge University. So, I mean, this I just wanted to laugh because the winged lion is a very ancient symbol. You'll see it in churches. You'll see it in St. Mark's Square. You know, it's a concept of an angelic lion, you know, who came from the heavens. So when she said I was going to see a lion with wings, I thought that's a quaint idea. I then, that night, in the wilderness of Africa, a lion came roaring very close to the hut in which I was sleeping. And the next morning, it was a real lion now, not in my dreams. The next morning, I went tracking this lion with the Shangaan trackers. And the amazing thing is when we finally found him, there he was, a really unbelievably impressive lion. I mean, my heart was palpitating. And then I saw that where we found him was actually on a gravel landing strip where the private aircrafts land in the middle of this wilderness area. So there he was on the landing strip with the windsock blowing behind him. And I suddenly realized, well, that's him saying, I've landed, you know. You can't see my wings because you're not trained sufficiently to look beyond the physical realm, but I'm your sacred lion guardian. Isn't that amazing?
I just thought that your knowledge of symbolism was such a lovely description of how you finally started connecting the dots. And then when you also go into more detail about how he leaves the physical world, I have to tell you, when I read that, I sobbed. I was so distraught by what you wrote. I really felt as though you were a close friend who just had a family member pass, and it was really upsetting to me.
Oh.
So could you please share with our audience what happens next?
Okay, I can. And I won't go into too much detail because we'll both be crying. And, you know, it was the most, one of the most tragic events in this work of protecting the lions. But basically, he was targeted as a trophy. And I tried everything in my power to stop it because Maria told me that although he was a golden lion, he carried the secret code that would bring the white lions back to this region after they'd been hunted to extinction. He carried the secret code, which is a genetic marker that some of the golden lions in that region carry. And she said he was the last of the gene-bearing lions. But nevertheless, they hunted him anyway. And it was just too terrible for words. Despite everything we tried to do to stop it, they hunted him. And then in my grief, when I was trying to make sense of this terrible tragedy for me, because it was like hunting an angel and my guardian angel. You know, we spoke about astrology. I went to astrologers to try and understand, and they analyzed the date that he'd been assassinated, and it turned out that it was on the last day of the month of Leo, when the sun set, and at a specific moment that is known by the ancient Egyptians as the moment that the king passes back to his kingdom, or that a new king is born on earth. It's the moment that the sun crosses the heart star of the lion constellation. And it happens in a flash, and that was the moment he was killed. So, I mean, I was just awestruck because not only was I outraged by what people had done, but I realized that no matter what people do, there's a higher plan. And he returned to his kingdom in that moment. And he will always guard over events on earth. We cannot destroy sacredness. You know, God is stronger. And people need to wake up to the fact that we're living actually in a time of revelations, a time of catastrophe, where we need to remember that we, you know, we've been given this beautiful earth, and our responsibility is to govern it with love and respect, not with total exploitation.
And I think the whole experience has truly helped you to continue on your journey and develop a deeper perspective of consciousness, which I think is critical to your work. You decided to start an organization called the Global White Lion Protection Trust. Can you tell our audience about the organization? And can you also go into detail about the restoration of this species?
Right. Well, you know, we've spoken a lot about the spiritual side of things, the meanings behind the symbols and in nature and so on. But it was clear to me that we have to get very practical about solutions. So I founded an organization that is totally practical, that is totally goal-driven, that has very clear action steps, and that is supported by scientists. And so the Global White Lion Protection Trust, it's called global because although these white lions are born in one sacred site on Earth, the world is responsible for them. The fact that they've got to all the corners of the globe, including Las Vegas and all the rest, means that they are global heritage for our grandchildren. And this organization had very, very clear aims and objectives. And one of the primary aims was to rescue the highest gene-bearing white lions that were trapped in these killing camps and return them to their sacred ancestral lands, which were also their natural wild lands and pride lands. But in order to do that, I mean, we were caught in a catch-22 because the white lions were held captive in these cages to be killed. And then back in Simbavati, it's legal to hunt lions in the wild. So if we were to release them there, the policy is that they can be trophy hunted for an astronomical fee in the wild. So we were caught between these two horrors. And what we realized as an organization we had to do was to secure vast tracts of land and create a protected area in the heartland of their ancestral endemic areas. We had to raise phenomenal funds to do so, and people around the world have been incredibly focused and very generous because they realize that there is a very positive outcome that occurs when the King of Kings returns to their kingdom, and that's what's happened. So basically, we have three prides of white lions now from different genetic bloodlines who are roaming free in a vast protected area in the epicenter of their natural environment, and that's just the beginning.
Your organization also looks to work with other organizations that are sincerely devoted to conservation, which is actually, unfortunately, a rarity. It just seems as though there are so many organizations out there who, unfortunately, seem to be self-serving. Why did you decide that you wanted to make this something that wasn't just about your organization, but you wanted to lend your energy, your effort, your talent, your everything to working with other groups?
Well, you know, June, real conservation has to be collaborative. It has to be inclusive because the problem's so big that we need to work together to solve it. And when organizations become protectionist, I'd say, and they don't collaborate, I know that they've lost it. They haven't got the full picture. And you know, in very real terms, the white lion is the top of the food chain. But if you protect the apex predator, anyone who has studied the way ecosystems works knows this, that if you protect the apex predator, you're protecting the whole ecosystem. You look at an apex predator to see whether the ecosystem is healthy, because if you take the tip of the pyramid away of the whole food chain, the whole thing collapses. So when you protect the king of animals, you protect all the other animals, and it all is interconnected. So we're happy to work with any environmental group that is doing a good job. You know, we're not exclusive at all.
And that's very evident, especially by the book that you wrote, which is absolutely wonderful. I really enjoyed reading it. Once again, the name of the book is Saving the White Lions, One Woman's Battle for Africa's Most Sacred Animal. Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Could you leave our audience with your website so that they can not only keep up with you, but also get involved?
I certainly will do. And just to add that, yes, my book, the subtitle is One Woman's Battle for Africa's Most Sacred Animals, Saving the White Lions. Well, yes, it is my story. I share it with everyone. I want to encourage everyone to follow your lion heart and to activate you to make your difference in your own unique way. So it's no longer one woman's battle. It's a collaborative campaign in which all of us work together, those of us who are really becoming conscious at this time and connected, as we're saying, we work together to save the earth. So that's what the book's about. And you can go onto my website, which is whitelions.org. There are many ways in which you can assist. Of course, donations are incredibly welcome. And one way in which you can donate by PayPal is for a meter of predator-proof fencing, because this protected area that we've created has to have predator-proof fencing and poacher-proof fencing so that the lions are safe. You know, that's a relatively small contribution, but it makes a huge difference. You can also visit our project. It's not open to the public, but it is open to special individuals and special tourists. And you'll see the other ways in which you can assist. Also, if you sign our petition to save the white lions, there's no law currently that protects the white lions. If you put your name to our petition, which is on our website, whitelions.org, you will be contributing to the campaign to have them protected by law. And if you buy my book, every sale of my book, everything that comes to me goes straight to the lions. And also it is recorded that it is another person who would like the white lions protected. So every sale supports the efforts. June, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on your show, and I really appreciate everything you're doing significantly with all the key issues in our times.
It's my pleasure, Linda. And I just want to make one more comment. Folks, Linda also has launched a campaign against can hunting. And so look for the information on her website, and also check out a video that she recently did that explains what can hunting is and why you really need to get involved to end this madness. Linda, thank you so much. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.